Our guest today is Cook County Board President. There's a few things I wanted to share with you. Number one, she is a frequent attendee at City Club of Chicago events, for which we are enormously grateful, especially on subjects like she's going to address today. Number two, she encourages her leadership team, many of whom are here today. I see Dr. Shannon and others here, Lynetta, Earl Manning, and others here. And we are very grateful for that. Also, she is the mother of two beautiful children and grandmother of three beautiful grandchildren, Braxton, Xavier, and Ava. Ladies and gentlemen, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. Madam President.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm very grateful to be here this morning, and I want to begin by taking just a minute or two to acknowledge some of our guests. First of all, I am grateful for the partnership and collaboration that we have in our seven-county region, the Chicago Regional Growth Corporation. And the chair or president, Chris, which is it? Where are you? Chairman of the Kane County Board of Commissioners, Chris Lauzen, is here with his wife, Sarah. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you. Thank you, Chris and Sarah. I want to acknowledge some of our county elected officials. Fritz Kagi is here, our assessor. Thank you, Fritz. And a number of our commissioners are here. And I would ask that all the commissioners stand. Would you please stand, all of our county commissioners? Alma Anaya, Dennis Deere, Stanley Moore, Brandon Johnson, Commissioner Scott Britton, Bridget Degnan, Bridget Gaynor, Donna Miller, Kevin Morrison. Thank you very much. I'm grateful for your presence today. I also want to thank Amy Campanelli, our public defender, for joining us. And Hill Hammock and Dr. Shannon, Jay Shannon, from our health and hospital system. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I would also be remiss if I didn't acknowledge Chuck Bernardini, who's an old friend, who was a colleague of mine in the city council, who was a county commissioner for a period, and is my finance chair. Thank you very much, Chuck. So I want to thank all of you for joining me today, and I want to thank Jay Doherty and the City Club of Chicago for this opportunity. I'd like to acknowledge my great staff, some of whom are with us today. I couldn't do this work without them. Lynetta Haynes-Turner is my chief of staff, and I would ask all of the other staff members, would you please stand? I wanted to be sure to recognize you for your hard work. Today is the first day of an inaugural Racial Equity Week, a week of learning, listening, and engagement that we will hold each year in September to emphasize the importance of this initiative. This morning, I want to talk about racial equity, why it matters to me, and why it should matter to all of us. Let me start with a few stark facts. Chicago has the biggest life expectancy gap of the 50 largest states in the United States. In Washington Park, on the south side of Chicago, the average life expectancy is 69. In Wilmette, in the northern suburbs, it's 82. In West Garfield Park, on the west side, it's 65. In Schaumburg, in the northwest suburbs, it's 85. In Englewood, on the south side of Chicago, it's 60. And in Streeterville, downtown, it's 90. That's a difference of 30 years. Your zip code should not determine your life expectancy, and your race should not determine your access to opportunity. But far too often it does. And the question is why? To begin this conversation, we need to understand the difference between equity and equality and how that difference can result in unintended consequences. As you can see in this illustration, equality and equity have vastly different consequences. Government has been operating under the assumption that everyone deserves fairness and that an equal distribution of resources will lead to equal outcomes. On paper, that may make sense. But let's talk about reality. In reality, equal distribution of resources and policies that seem fair on the surface do not lead to equal outcomes. Why? Because the playing field is not level. In America, the playing field has never, ever been level. If you are a woman, if you are black, if you are Latinx, if you have a disability, if you speak another language, if you were born in another country, in other words, if you are most of the population of Cook County, the playing field has never been level. So instead of using the principle of equality, government must instead focus on equity. Equity is an effort to ensure that the playing field is made level by providing resources according to need and finding the root causes of unequal outcomes, and by carefully examining and understanding that seemingly sensible policies and operations oftentimes have unintended consequences. The policy roadmap, the 5-year strategic plan that I released in my City Club speech last November, centers on equity. It makes equity a foundational value and mandates that an equity lens be used in all of our strategies as a policy and practice, from employee training to funding formulas. Using an equity lens is not only the responsibility of government. To be truly effective, equity must permeate the practices of corporations, not-for-profit agencies, and educational institutions. Everyone, those in this room and those who are not, has a responsibility to ensure that we promote equity, diversity, and inclusion, and that we instill that in everything that we do. Today we will focus on government, because government is not merely reacting to a need that exists. We must acknowledge that government has been responsible for much of the inequity that we see today. The Metropolitan Planning Council put out a report called The Cost of Segregation, which I hope many of you have seen and read, that outlines many of the consequences of the government policies of the past several decades and how these policies have hurt us economically as an entire region. We know about the history of redlining in Chicago and the racist loan practices that made black homeownership all but an impossibility. We know about panic peddling, blockbusting, and how government policies led to segregation, disinvestment, over-policing, and a lack of economic opportunity that we see in so many communities across Cook County today. Chicago was lucky enough to benefit from the Great Migration, a thriving mosaic of communities of color, from Bronzeville to Rogers Park, Berwyn to Cicero, Homewood to Maywood, coalesced in that wake. But lately we've seen the opposite occur. We've seen a great out-migration of black families who leave the region to find prosperity elsewhere. And we already know why. The result of these decades of racist policies is that health, wealth, education, and life expectancy differ. Black and Latinx communities have far worse outcomes than white communities. The result of these policies is that you can drive through large swaths of Cook County and see nothing but empty storefronts. You can have a 2-hour commute to work because the only house you can afford is in Roseland, and the only job you can get is in Rosemont. And you and your family might give up the struggle and move elsewhere because it's too hard to live here. As an elected official, I believe we have a moral and fiscal responsibility to change that. Policymakers and leaders can change that narrative and close the opportunity gap, the wealth gap, the health gap. And we can start by calling it what it really is, the race gap. Earlier this year, State's Attorney Kim Fox stood before you to talk about the importance of criminal justice reform and how we were addressing the racial disparities in the criminal justice system. Funded by the MacArthur Foundation Safety and Justice Challenge, all of the criminal justice stakeholders are working together to address these disparities and end excessive and unjust detention. My office has made significant investments in violence reduction. I believe we must elevate the voices of justice-involved people as we address the inequities in Cook County's criminal justice system. Bond court reforms that we've put in place have been successful in making our county safer. Before bond reform, it was possible for defendants who posed a higher risk to the community to be out on bond if they had enough money, while poor, nonviolent defendants were kept behind bars, often for weeks or months. Despite what you've heard, reducing our reliance on monetary bond has not hurt public safety. Since bond reform, less than 1% of those released were charged with a new violent offense. These are the facts. Criminal justice reform has been a top priority of my administration from the beginning because it was unacceptable for the largest single-site jail in the country to have a population that is 86% black and brown. Our jail was a modern-day poorhouse, and we've worked hard to change that. So today I'd like to focus on three other areas that typically receive less attention, but truly show how racial equity can be advanced. These three areas are transportation, public health, and digital access. Connecting Cook County, the first long-range transportation plan in 75 years, was adopted in 2016 and shaped with the input of many agencies and residents, perhaps some of you here in this room. It has become the blueprint that guides our transportation work. Equity is a priority of the plan, and it shows how our Department of Transportation conducts studies, awards, grants, and designs public infrastructure. Because equity is a priority in the plan, engineers and designers consider who will benefit and who will be burdened when planning new projects. So far, I've talked about racial equity in broad strokes. And it's a big concept, but when it comes to public infrastructure, and specifically transportation, it's a matter of access. How did you get to work today? Did you drive? How are the roads leading from your neighborhood to your office? Did you take public transit? How long was your walk to the train or bus stop? How long was your wait? Are there job opportunities in your neighborhood? If so, why? And if not, why not? There are many factors a business ponders when choosing a location for a manufacturing plant or an office. And one of the most pressing is the ability for goods and personnel to move to and from the site with ease. If infrastructure is crumbling and public transit is inadequate, the jobs go elsewhere. For too long, we've seen neighborhoods on the south and west side of our county stall, while areas to the north and the heart of the city have thrived. We applaud the neighborhoods that do well. We want them to continue to grow and prosper. But we are one county, and the whole region suffers when communities don't have the opportunity to thrive. As the late Senator from Minnesota, Paul Wellstone, famously said, "We all do better when we all do better." I've walked these neighborhoods. I've lived on the south side of Chicago for 50 years. I've seen this struggle all over the south and west sides of Cook County. That's why I've made transportation infrastructure, from rail to roads, from mass transit to bike and pedestrian paths, a top priority. When it comes to infrastructure, I've made it my mission to ensure that our traditionally underserved communities receive the attention they need. We must acknowledge that equity doesn't arrive when we say we are equal. It comes when we show it. Simply put, our policies must align with our professed values. We've committed to a transportation plan that considers the needs of all of Cook County by empowering our communities to address their greatest needs. 3 years ago, Cook County created Invest in Cook, a transportation grant program to implement the priorities of connecting Cook County. I'm proud to say that we've awarded $23 million to advance almost 100 projects. I'm also proud to say that half of the Invest in Cook grants, half of them, have gone to projects in low and moderate income communities, especially African American communities in the South suburbs. As we move forward with these vital projects, we always approach new proposals through an equity lens. Our efforts are guided by the greatest need. It all goes back to that big picture. Who needs to be uplifted to level the playing field? I knew from talking to residents in the South suburbs that they struggled when it came to transit and infrastructure. That's why my Department of Transportation and Highways commissioned the South Cook County Mobility Study in 2018. The study took a hard look at the challenges faced by commuters in the Southland. Armed with real data, we are now working closely with our regional transit partners on a concrete pilot plan to assist residents in the southern portion of our county with more frequent, affordable, and accessible transportation options. Our goal is to ensure that residents on the south side of Chicago and the south suburbs have better access to transit. Now, no agreements have been signed yet, but we're looking to reduce fares on the Metro Electric and Rock Island lines and increase frequency of service to and from South Cook County. And we're committed to making the initial investment to make sure this 3-year pilot plan happens. And I'm confident we'll get there. This is what equity investments in transportation look like. But transportation is only part of what we do in Cook County. Healthcare has an enormous impact on our residents. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously said, "Of all the forms of inequity, injustice in healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane." And we can see that in the health disparities prevalent in Cook County. Tackling these injustices head on, Cook County Health serves more than 300,000 patients through County Care, our Medicaid expansion plan. Now, we have 2 hospitals out of the 70 hospitals in Cook County, 2 out of 70, Stroger and Provident. And yet, Cook County Health provides half of all the charity care in Cook County. 2 hospitals out of 70 and half of the charity care. Cook County Healthcare is a system that has a 180-year legacy of providing service to all, regardless of race, immigration status, or ability to pay. For African American residents, the old Cook County Hospital was the only place that they could go to receive treatment, even though the wait would sometimes be 24 hours. To address that great need, in 1991, Cook County acquired Provident, a privately run hospital in Washington Park that opened in 1891 and closed its doors in 1987. Provident Hospital opened as an African American institution and was the first nursing school for black women in Chicago. Provident was also the setting for the nation's first open heart surgery, performed by Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, a prominent African American physician. But Provident, like many aging facilities, requires significant investments for repairs and maintenance, more than $100 million. 2 years ago, Cook County acquired vacant land adjacent to the hospital and intended to build a new regional outpatient center while maintaining the existing hospital. While the plan made perfect sense on paper, Cook County Health did not make the decision to move forward. Why? Because they used an equity lens. Cook County Health assessed the needs of the surrounding community and determined that the needs of the community would not be met by a new regional outpatient center alone. There was still a great need for access to specialty care and inpatient services. Evaluating who would benefit and who would be burdened through an equity lens allowed us to reshape the vision for Provident Hospital. Provident will provide that care because we know that it's unacceptable that in Washington Park, the life expectancy is more than 10 years lower than in affluent neighborhoods. We know that Cook County Health can raise that number. It's an ambitious goal, but it's a goal we have to set. Because we know that so much of the difference in outcomes for people of color has to do with access, the last area I want to focus on is digital access. We all know about the digital divide, the gap between those with and without home access to the internet. A Pew National survey published in August found that 79% of white respondents reported having access to high-speed internet in their homes, compared to only 66% in the African-American community and 61% in the Latinx community. Black and Latinx respondents were also more dependent on smartphones than whites. Black and Latinx individuals were more likely than white respondents to depend on smartphones when seeking health information or looking for work. And while a smartphone can help you find job postings, it's difficult to format a resume or complete an application without using a keyboard and a mouse. And as parents of every school-age child know, having a computer in your home with high-speed internet access gives students a tremendous advantage over their peers who cannot do homework online. In Cook County, 76% of the households have broadband access. That means that one out of every four families does not. We've made some steps to close this gap, but there's much more that needs to be done. Following the 2008 recession, Cook County partnered with the state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, South Suburban Mayors and Managers, and Northeastern Illinois University to make a $10 million investment in expanding broadband access throughout the county and into the south suburbs. This expansion allowed the county to provide the public with free Wi-Fi access at 54 county buildings located throughout the region. This broadband expansion created the Chicago Southland Fiber Network. Through this network, businesses, towns, schools, libraries, and courthouses in the south suburbs along I-57 can use our public-private partnership to purchase affordable broadband. But despite these efforts, too many Southland households, many with school-aged children, still do not have broadband. While internet service providers do have programs to serve lower-income residents, we need to be more focused on public efforts to bring residents greater access to fundamental digital services. Looking ahead, we'd like to work with state and elected officials and other stakeholders to expand the Chicago Southland Fiber Network. Expanding the network would impact residents' access to healthcare resources and government services. Expanding the network would help us prepare for new technologies and improve connections between existing systems for law enforcement, emergency management, and schools. In 2016, about a quarter of the public schools in Illinois were unable to meet minimum broadband speeds for online standardized tests. Over 200 of these schools were located in the Chicago Southland region. We've taken initial steps to address what we believe is needed to overcome a history of inequity. We're expanding access and opportunity by using an equity lens. Bringing that lens to every policy and practice will advance racial equity in Cook County. Community voice and engagement is essential to this work. Consistent two-way dialogue is a piece that has been missing from Cook County for far too long. That's why the second foundational value of the policy roadmap is engagement. Cook County residents must have a say in decisions that affect their lives. We're deeply invested in this work. This year, my administration joined the Government Alliance on Race and Equity. As a member, we can connect with our peers across the country who are also deeply engaged in advancing racial equity. Engaging with our peers will allow us to work together to effect change on a larger scale. Additionally, I'm proud to say that we have established a Racial Equity Leadership Council in my administration to oversee this work. The council includes staff members in all offices and all levels of leadership and is overseen directly by my office. And it's not just my administration that's committed to this work. I'm joined today by the co-chairs of the Committee on Addressing Bias, Equity, and Cultural Competency, Cook County Commissioners Alma Anaya, Dennis Deer, Stanley Moore, and Kevin Morrison. I look forward to aligning our work with the committees to ensure that equity is addressed in structural and lasting ways throughout Cook County government. This isn't work that can be achieved in a day or a year or even a decade. This year marks the 400th anniversary of 1619, the year that the first enslaved Africans were kidnapped and brought to American colonies. Those 400 years have weighed heavily on black and brown people who built this country. While I believe deeply in our democratic ideals, I know those ideals will not become a reality unless we fight for them. As I've said many times as a former history teacher, I look to our history for lessons that can teach us about how to shape our future. As Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King once said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. But it doesn't bend of its own volition. Abolitionists who fought to end slavery for more than two centuries, many did not live to see the 13th Amendment passed in the United States that ended slavery in 1865. Suffragists, including women of color, such as Ida B. Wells and Sojourner Truth, fought for decades before the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote, was finally passed in 1920. Mexican-American activist Dolores Huerta once said, "Every moment is an organizing opportunity, and every person a potential activist, every minute a chance to change the world." I hope you will join me in making that change. I hope you will help me level the playing field. I hope you will stand with me and commit to making Cook County an equitable place where everyone can thrive. Thank you.
Thank you, President Preckwinkle, for those remarks and your insights and inspiration. Just a reminder, you have blue slips on your tables. If you have a question for President Preckwinkle, please fill them out and forward them this way. All right, we had some questions that were submitted online for you. The first one comes from Doris Davenport. Thank you for establishing a week designated to racial equity and for instituting policies and practices to back it up. How can Cook County going forward avoid traditional gender bias at the intersection of race and gender?
Well, I think the issue of addressing inequity is fundamentally an issue of leadership. My chief of staff is a woman. Four of our six bureau chiefs are women. You need to put women in positions of leadership if you're serious about gender equality. And I've tried to do that.
Okay, this one comes from Shashi Singh of Agile N2N, Inc. How do you envision to transform the vast Cook County workforce to become more empowered and innovative?
Early on, when Rahm Emanuel was elected, but before he became mayor, the two of us sat down and said, we share a building, but we really don't interact very much. And we put together a task force to look at ways in which the city and county might work together. And one of the ways in which we determined that we could work together was around employment training. And we put together the city's money and the county's money from the Department of Labor and created a new not-for-profit called the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership that gets all the federal money, but because it's a not-for-profit, is also able to secure grants from corporations and philanthropic institutions. And that Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership has tried to address the needs both of people looking for work or advancement in their careers and businesses. And it's working with and through the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership that we've tried to lift up the workforce. Clearly more work needs to be done in that arena, but I think the fact that we've combined our efforts rather than having two disparate organizations trying to serve the people of Cook County has been a real step forward.
This comes from Suzanne Dovakis. Sorry if I mispronounced that. It's really a comment. Minority kids need culture coaching. They give the aha sigh when understanding comes. Then communication can truly begin. Thank you for that. Dwayne Deskins, former federal prosecutor. Public safety is a fundamental priority in a society. Indeed, Cook County has one of the largest criminal justice systems in the United States. Yet this past summer, 1,000 people were shot and many of them died. People are legitimately afraid to cooperate for fear of retaliation. What are we doing to protect witnesses?
So the first thing I should say is one of the biggest challenges we face as a county and as a region is the violence that plagues so many of our communities. It has a terrible impact on the individuals, of course, who are shot or killed and their families and their communities. But it has a tremendous impact on all of us. I don't know about you, but I often talk to my family's members across the country on Sunday evening, and often the first question out of their mouth is, you know, what happened in Chicago this weekend? All I hear about is the shootings and the murders. Are you safe? You know, I think the first thing we need to understand is that the violence takes place, and depending on how you figure it, about 15 to 19 of the 77 community areas in the city of Chicago. So while I won't say it's contained, it's surely concentrated. And these are the communities that face the biggest challenges across the board. There are communities with high levels of unemployment, low levels of educational attainment. They're often food deserts. They have no retail. So they face a broad set of challenges, and we can't just look at them in terms of the violence and say that's all we need to pay attention to. We can't have a policing strategy solution to the challenges these communities face. Not that we don't need better. Not that we don't need better policing. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you have to have a holistic approach to these communities, and we have to have a strategy for trying to address those communities comprehensively. Having said that, you know, I should also say that there are tremendous social costs that all of us bear for the violence, not just the people in those communities impacted. First of all, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to treat people who have gunshot wounds, and they disproportionately come to Cook County Hospital. Now, they come there because we have a great trauma center. We have lots of practice treating people with gunshot wounds. And the terrible truth is it costs us more as a society if people live than if they die, because often they have terrible injuries that burden them for the rest of their lives. And uninsured, we care for them. There's that financial impact. And then there's the financial impact of our national reputation, which I sort of addressed at the beginning. Now, part of this is fueled by President Trump, who's decided he's going to make us the national whipping boy on this issue. And the truth is that on a per capita basis, we're not the most violent place in the country. And actually, the shootings and the murders have gone down since a high point in 2016. They were lower in 2017 than 2016, lower in 2018 than 2017, and we're on a path to be lower in 2019 than we are in 2018. But that will never be the narrative nationally. The narrative nationally is all the murders and the shootings in Chicago. And, you know, if you're a company, do you want to locate in a place that has that kind of reputation? If you're a talented person, do you want to come to the violence capital of the country if you listen to President Trump? I don't think so. So there are these perhaps unacknowledged consequences of our reputation for violence that we should all be aware of. So this is a tremendous challenge, and we need to address it collectively, but we've got to think about it in more holistic terms than it's usually cast.
All right, we have a few more questions. Alicia Tate from Cabrini Green Legal Aid. We have a new cannabis law with incredible equity provisions. What are the opportunities and the things we should be concerned about?
First of all, the thing about the cannabis law that I'm most grateful for is its expungement provisions. I've always said that I supported legalization of cannabis, not because I have anything good to say about marijuana, but only because black and brown kids are the only ones who get arrested for marijuana offenses. So I've said, you know, if you're not going to arrest white people, nobody should be arrested. One of the real challenges of this measure as well is that the playing field is not level. The national firms are going to have a real advantage in the way in this is presently structured to come in and do the growth and distribution parts of this. And after a couple years, I think the legislation says, there'll be an evaluation to see if there are inequities, and then we'll try to address them. By which time, of course, the national firms will have cornered the market, and I don't know how these people of color and other firms are going to get into the marketplace. So that's, I'm grateful for the expungement provisions. That will have a tremendous impact on black and brown communities. But I'm concerned about the economic opportunity part of this and whether or not the communities, the black and brown communities that have been most heavily impacted detrimentally by the war on drugs, will have a real opportunity to participate in the economic upside.
Mary Anderson, Chicago director of AARP. We are concerned with the isolation of older adults in Cook County, especially African-American families, as African-American families leave the county. How can organizations like AARP and other senior advocacy groups partner with your administration to address the needs of older adults in the African-American and Latinx communities?
I think it's important to acknowledge that some things are harder than others in government, and that not every unit of government can address all the challenges we face. So the truth is that in Cook County, half of our budget is health care, and about 38%+ is criminal justice, public safety. So that's, by my calculation, about 88%, which means we have 12% for everything else we do. And in the 60s, for reasons that aren't clear to me, lost in the mists of time, the county basically outsourced its social service agenda to CETA. We have a standing seat on the board there. It's the only not-for-profit agency that I can think of where we have a standing seat. But we really don't do much social service. We have community development block grant money from the federal government, and we support social service agencies around the county. But those efforts, frankly, are pretty modest in relation to the rest of what we do. So we'll be happy to talk to you, but I need to be honest that the resources that we have to address a lot of our social safety net challenges are pretty modest. We have money for housing, and we're trying to figure out creative ways to use that more effectively. And we have some resources for social services, but the local municipalities, frankly, are better resource to address those challenges than we are, given the fact that, as I said 50 years ago, we pretty much exited the social service arena.
All right, we have time for a couple more here. Creola Hampton, does the ratio of contracts for minorities match that of the percentage of the county's residencies? Now, Creola cites some statistics here, 23% black, 25% Hispanic, 7.9% Asian, and 42% white.
The short answer is no. I will tell you, though, that we have made a commitment from the beginning in my administration to try to address the challenges of inclusion. One of the first things we did was invest a lot in information technology so we could figure out exactly what was happening in the contract and vendor arena, because previously the only way we could determine whether the vendor or the contractor had met their MBE, their Minority Business Enterprise, and their Women Business Enterprise, WBE, requirements was at the end in their reporting. And by then, all we could do if they didn't meet those milestones was fine them. And some companies just figured into their budget the cost of the fines, and that was it. So we invested a lot in information technology so we could have real-time information about how they were doing and call them in and hold them accountable and take corrective action prior to the conclusion of the contract or the conclusion of the vendor opportunity, rather than waiting until the end and then finding them. So we've done a lot better just because we've invested in information technology and we're better prepared to deal with folks who aren't compliant. But we still have a long way to go. And frankly, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I will just say that we publish them annually. And I would suggest to you that you'd have a hard time finding out that information from other units of government. But we publish the information, and that's a double-edged sword. People can tell how well we're doing and perhaps how we should be doing better and be critical of us for it. But I would suggest to you that that's a better place to be than hiding the ball, than not divulging that information. So we have an annual report on how we're doing on MBE and WBE participation. Our website is cookcountyil.gov. You can find that information there. And I'm sorry, I can't quote you the numbers off the top of my head.
We have time for one more question. This comes from John McLeese. The city is finding it difficult to increase the amount of affordable housing in Chicago. How can the county help on that percentage of 12%?
The county gets dollars to support affordable housing from the federal government based on its suburban population. City of Chicago has its own allocation from the federal government. And pretty early on, we decided that we would devote a disproportionate amount of our resources to the Housing Authority of Cook County, which serves those in the county who are most challenged in terms of their ability to pay for housing. So we've invested a lot of our affordable housing dollars in renovating existing Housing Authority of Cook County buildings and facilities, both for families and seniors, and investing in new facilities. So our resources, our housing resources in Cook County, have gone to some projects, put together by not-for-profits around the county, but frankly, most of the money has gone to the Housing Authority of Cook County to support its work. And since, as I said, their target audience is those who have the greatest need, we thought that was appropriate.
Let's have a round of applause for President Preckwinkle.